This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
I'm Mark Packer. My partner is Wes Durham. We are here to, again, entertain and inform for the next 2 hours, 59 minutes, and 12 seconds. Mr. Durham, happy April Fool's Day.
A little chilly this morning. Yeah, happy April 1st. A little chilly here on the farm this morning. Hope you're well in Charlotte. And when we last left you, Mr. Packer, you were headed out the door, express lane style, to the office of a local Charlotte orthopedic doctor.
Dr. Romanowski.
For an update on a balky right knee.
Yeah, Dr. Romanowski. Doctor of the Stars, as I called him. Doctor of the Stars. He's tied in with the Hornets.
Yeah.
And that's our NBA team here. Here's the deal.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. I'm going to cut right to the chase here. He squeezed me in, all right? Because that's why I had to get out of here ASAP. And so they were waiting on me, bells and whistles, all the great stuff. And he comes rolling in. I'm sitting there on the lab chair, you know, miserable. And he comes walking in. Pack, how we doing? I said, you know. He says, let's talk about this transfer portal. He goes right into the transfer portal. He wants
Excuse
to
me?
Talk.
Excuse me?
The knee can wait. We'll get to your knee. Let's talk about the transfer portal. Now, let me tell you now, Dr. Romanowski.
Transfer portal?
He is into it. He's a sports nut. That's when you're doing, when you're looking at the knees of the stars, you know, he's into everything. I mean, he's the man of the Hornets. And so we talked about the transfer portal for, I don't know, 10 minutes. What's the NCAA going to do? What ACC guys are staying? What are leaving? He's into it. I mean, totally into it. What's the matter?
Did you tell him our working theory on the Packer and Durham program?
I did. I said, Doc, you got to look at it this way. He says, Pack, we got over 1,300 in the transfer portal. I said, we have more than that. He goes, well, I just read, and, you know, because he, like I said, he is a junkie. He's into all this stuff. I said, no. We got everybody's in the transfer portal. Every single player is in the transfer
portal.
Now, most of them are going to come back and enjoy their college experience, get a great college degree, hopefully win some games, get some playing time. So I explained that to him. He goes, that makes sense. And so he goes right from that into name, image, and likeness. And I'm like, hey, Doc, I'm here for the knee.
What about the knee?
Yeah, I'm here for the knee. So
what about the knee?
If we had a microphone, we could have done a radio show. It could have been the 1 hour of Dr. Romanowski breaking down college athletics. But again, he's tremendous. He's awesome. So we finally get to the knee, and here's the deal. I'll go right into layman's terms. He said, Pack, what happened to you is very rare. I said, what do you mean by that? He goes, normally somebody falls, they will tear an ACL. Yeah, tear an ACL, tear an MCL, tear the meniscus. And he said, I thought you had torn your meniscus, but I couldn't tell you that until I saw the MRI. He goes, when I saw the MRI, I was stunned because your meniscus is fine, but you've torn your tendon in the right side of your knee. He goes, that is so incredibly unusual. And I said, okay, so with that said, what do we do? Are we scoping? Or are we not scoping? What's the story? He goes, you know what? He goes, it's your call. He goes, and he goes, listen, I'm a surgeon. I'd be more than happy to do it for you, obviously. But he goes, if you aren't in excruciating pain, I would just tell you, let's just see how far you can go. Because now eventually, you're probably going to need this done. And when we do, we got to clean out a bunch of other stuff. You got the bone chips and all the other issues you got with the knee. But he goes, tag, you're it. He goes, if you can deal with it, I would just tell you to deal with it. If you can't, then let's go get this done. So ball's in my court. So there you go. That's the long story made short.
And?
I'm playing hurt.
And?
What do you mean, and? There's no and. You know the answer. I'm going to play hurt.
No. Look here. No.
I'm playing hurt. I'm
As
not
your
going
partner.
Under that. You know me
as
by now.
Aid,
I don't. If I take a day, if I take a day off, you know that I'm either on my deathbed or something seriously is wrong.
Okay.
So I'm playing hurt.
All right, look, we can schedule all that stuff out. We'll get Dr. Romanowski to do like a Friday afternoon, 1 o'clock scope or something.
Can be back for the radio show.
You go get your scope.
Come back for the radio show.
Get back for the 4 o'clock deal. Right
there, you go. If I can do it,
sure. Yeah.
Drug me up enough, I'm in.
So, but I'm not, you get a Friday afternoon, 1 o'clock deal that gives you Saturday and Sunday to get it kind of, you know,
put some dirt on it,
rehabbed up a little bit. You can get your
bourbon,
new position on the chair there with
more
Chester
bourbon
and Fuller. Well, yeah, being appropriate for the show. But so by Monday morning at 7 o'clock, you're ready to ride.
Well, that sounds like a great plan, but I'm
not
doing that.
Tell me we're not.
I just told you. If you don't, are you listening?
We're not going to go through the spring letting you be in pain.
Well, guess what? I'm in pain right now, even talking about it. I hobbled down the steps this morning. I'm playing hurt, Durham. I'm not taking time off. You know, we're America. You know, we're Americans.
How about a little
procedure? We go to work. We go to work in this country. You know, if you're looking for a way, listen to me.
Just a little.
Listen to me a second. Listen to me down there in Cartersville, Georgia, on the farm. We are Americans. What we do is we roll up our sleeves and we go to work. I've said for over 20, almost 25 years on radio, the goal of every American worker is to be suspended with pay. I've said that for 25 years on the air.
Yeah, yeah.
The point of that is you roll up your sleeves and you go to work. It's what made this country great. It's easy to go, hey, I'm hurt. Hey, I'm over here. Put me on the, you know, I'm out of bed now for, you know, I'm out of touch for 3 weeks. I'll catch y'all next month. No. It's not how you get better. You go to work. So I'm going to work. And I'm in pain now, but I don't care. We'll still get through this thing. Now, that's the knee. Should we announce it, Wes?
Not really, but yeah, okay.
Should we make this announcement? It's kind of fitting.
Go ahead.
We have agreed to a new contract at ESPN, and we're going to do this show for at least another year. We're going to make that announcement today. We wanted to go month by month, but they wouldn't accept
extensions.
It. They wouldn't accept it. So we're going to go one year.
See the graphic? Lucrative contract extension.
For the next year. Yeah. No question. It's got to be lucrative. We wouldn't do it if it wasn't lucrative. Kidding me? We'd get to work, though. So we want to make that announcement today on April Fool's Day.
Yeah.
All right. One more thing. Speaking of April Fools, I think April Fools, by the way, in my opinion, is the second most overrated celebrated day of the year. Trails only New Year's Eve. I think New Year's Eve is the most overrated day of the calendar. This might be the second. This might be number two.
All right.
April Fool's Day. But I got to tell you a funny gag. Can I give you a great one? It happened in our family. Can I give this to you real quick?
Sure. Sure.
I want to brag about my daughter, Gigi, our oldest. She's down in your neck of the woods in the ATL. She just accepted a new job for a new pharmaceutical company. All right. And she's very excited.
One?
Yeah.
New job.
Yeah. And
good.
She wasn't looking for it, got it, and she's thrilled to death. But the company she was with, she loved. But, you know, it's too good a deal.
Yeah. Very nice.
So she takes it. All right.
Yeah.
But the deal is her old company that she's leaving, she had a company car. And the car is parked on the street in her neighborhood in Atlanta. Well, dear old dad, Billy Packer, I'm telling Billy about Gigi's new gig. Billy calls up Gigi and it pretends that he's with the Atlanta Police Department and says, disguises his voice and says, Mrs. Packer, this is the Atlanta Police Department. Are you the driver of a whatever the car is? Yes, I am. Well, we're here to confiscate it. You were supposed to deliver that car back to this company, I'm not going to say it, a week ago. And the fact that the company has contacted us for an all points bulletin to find this vehicle, we have found it. We've noticed it, that you're still in possession. So we're going to come and if you don't return that car in the next 1 hour, we are going to come to your residence and arrest you. Now, Gigi is panic stricken. She's like, what do I do?
Billy, what is Billy doing?
Billy's doing this to his granddaughter. So Gigi is panic stricken. So she hangs up the phone. She texts me. She texts Amy. Oh my God, mom and dad, the cops are after me. Da, 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 da. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, Billy calls me and goes, hey, before this gets out of hand, I said, what are you talking about? He goes, I contacted Gigi as the Atlanta Police Department. I said, oh, big man, let me tell you something. That ball's already rolling downhill. She's already panic-stricken. So Billy pulls the April Fool's joke on Gigi that they're coming to her house to arrest her, the Atlanta Police Department. That's how we roll on April's Fool on the Packer household. How about that? Billy Packer.
When did Billy let Gigi know that he was the Atlanta?
I told him, I said, listen, Gigi's going to clean herself up, but you might want to give her a call back and apologize. And he was laughing and roaring, so I think they finally patched it up. That's a Billy Packer special for you. How about that? Second most overrated day. Billy's like COVID. He don't care. He don't care. At all. At all. All right. Let's get back on track here.
So
start this show.
If you're dialing in with us, Packers knee is TBD.
It's not good, but we're playing.
Billy plays a April Fool's Day joke ahead of April Fool's on his granddaughter.
Right.
Causes panic.
Panic.
And oh, by the way, tonight we offer you one versus two lacrosse tonight.
And we have a new
ACC
deal.
On ACC Network, and we're pretty excited about it.
And we announced that we have a new extension. And,
well, lucrative contract extension.
On April Fool's Day.
Lucrative.
We announced that.
Yeah. That's right. So all that being said, we get Duke and Carolina tonight, 7 o'clock, from
for
over
real.
In Durham on ACC Network. Chris Cotter, Quinn Kesnick will be there for the coverage. You can see it live on the ESPN app, of course. And we had Joe Bresci with us yesterday. You'll see a replay of that coming up in this hour. It's interesting because it's two powerhouses in a powerhouse league, Pack. That's the other thing I gleaned from our visit with Joe Bresci yesterday. Duke and Carolina just happened to be 1-2, but there are plenty of other candidates to be in those slots before the year is out within the ACC.
The ACC, and I wrote this down today just because I knew we were going to get to this. The ACC men's lacrosse teams are ranked 1, 2, 4, 6, and 9. That's 5 in the top 9. And the ladies are going, oh, that's real cute, boys. Here's what we got. The ladies are ranked 1, 2, 4, 5, 7, 8. And Louisville's 18th, by the way. They were 3rd last week. The league is a ridiculous juggernaut when it comes to lacrosse. And you're going to get 1 versus 2. Only the 6th time it's happened with men's lacrosse. Wes, it's going to happen tonight. Weather's going to be perfecto. It's going to be a little chill in the air. You talked about how cool it is down in Cartersville. Yep. It's coming our way. So it's going to be nice and crisp. It's almost going to feel like the fall tonight. And you got 1 and 2. And on top of that, you have not only the 1 and 2, but they are two offensive, explosive teams. So if you like high scoring, up and down, here we go. And if you've never watched a lacrosse game, do yourself a favor tonight and just check it out. And listen, the basketball didn't get cranked up with the ladies till Friday, the men on Saturday, even though the ACC is nowhere to be found there. But if you're just jonesing for something sports-wise, check out tonight. Duke, North Carolina, 1 and 2, high scoring. And by the way, it's the first of two 1-versus-2 matchups in lacrosse this week. The men take care of it tonight. The ladies take care of it on Saturday. We'll talk about all this stuff. But it will be wide open, fast and furious, and incredible talent all over the place.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, it's a Thursday. Start a new month, which means we look back at the last month. We do this every blank first. Notepad, Mr. Durham. We give you the best offensive player, best defensive player, best story, biggest disappointment, et cetera, et cetera. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I submitted mine a couple days ago. Felt confident about where we were before we ever got to the official end of March. Right. Yeah. Let's start with the best offensive player. I'll let you go first.
Okay, fair enough. I know it's still March Madness for some leagues, not for us, but this dude right here went off in March. Buddy Boeheim was fantastic. And I know the last game wasn't the best. I give Houston credit for shutting him down. But, man alive, did he put on a show when Syracuse needed it the most? And you knew it as soon as he touched the ball. It was going up and it was going in. And I thought Buddy Boeheim in March was spectacular. So he gets my nod as the best offensive player in March.
It's a good call. Good call. Could have gone that route. I went another way. Told you lacrosse is going to be big. Chris Gray of North Carolina is a machine. 12 goals, 11 assists in 3 games in March. As Pac says, get your popcorn, kids. Get ready. I mean, this guy, He's got 53 points this year already. 53.
But between Gray at North Carolina and Sowers at Duke tonight, boys, I'm just telling you, you don't even have to be a lacrosse fan, and you will be entertained with what you're going to see tonight. I'm just telling you. All right, best defensive player of the month in our March notepad. I'm going to go with the best defensive player I saw this year in the league. And I'm talking hoops. And Jose Alvarado is a joy to watch him play. His emotional farewell speech when the Jackets got eliminated told you everything you need to know about this guy. He plays with heart and passion. And, man, did he make a difference for the Jackets in their ACC championship season. Jose Alvarado, you get my nod, is the best defensive player in the month of March.
Good call there. I went to baseball. Logan Michaels of Virginia has become a machine. He leads the ACC in defensive chances and also leads the ACC in defensive fielding percentage. It's amazing. Guy's done a remarkable job for Brian O'Connor. And just those two stats jumped off the page.
Interesting.
Even from a guy who's a catcher, just to kind of have those opportunities. So congratulations. Logan Michaels is in, not only in defensive chances as a catcher, but defensive fielding percentage and also in the national charts as well.
Interesting. I did not expect that from you at all. I didn't know where you were going to go with that, but I didn't know you were going to go baseball. All right. The best story of the month. I'm going to go Jen Hoover. Wake Forest women's basketball program gets into the NCAA tournament for the first time since Jen played 1988. So I went with the Deacs. It's Gina Connie making a yoo-hoo shot right there. And I know it didn't last long, but man, it's just such a feel-good story to see just a lot of work to get back to the big dance. A nod to the Wake Forest Demon Deacs. Got the top hat right here, always ready for anything regarding the Swiss. So that's my lead right there. Wake Forest women's basketball.
All right. I went with our new friend, Coach Gia, and Notre Dame fencing, 11th national title. I'm in. Last 2 days, you got me. I'm in now, Pac.
Tell you what, I'm telling you.
When, 11 national championships now. I don't care what you're doing. 11 is strong.
No doubt. When you get double digits, you're doing something right. And I'm telling you, when I get that hornet's nest mask, I'm wearing it. I'm going to wear the whole show. Just telling you that right now. All right. We go from the good to the bad. The biggest disappointment for the month.
Yeah.
For me, it was Moses Wright missing the NCAA tournament. Here's a guy that played lights out, the ACC Player of the Year. Jackets coming off the ultimate high, winning the ACC tournament. Fired up, ready to go. They're going to the NCAAs. And lo and behold, the best player in the league can't go. And, man, that stunk. So, for me, that was the biggest disappointment. Moses Wright missing the NCAA tournament.
There you go. I'm with you on that part. That was disappointing. For me, it was more of a collaborative effort, if you will. ACC postseason hoops was tough. We've already given you some of the ugly stuff. Winning percentage-wise, 1979, only a year worse. It's just there was not a lot to build on there, gang. And let's hope we have a better March next year. Let's hope that. How's that? Man. Exits were not pretty, Pac. Not pretty at all.
Unfortunately, they were plentiful. Tough year. I mean, listen, the bowl season wasn't pretty, and postseason hoops wasn't pretty. But we move on. You know, it's rearview mirror now. Like I said the other day, you got it now. The object is to go get better. The only way you do it, Wes, you go to work. Like I told you, leading off the show, you go to work. Yeah. All right. Biggest surprise. Now, you can read that any way you want, good or bad. Biggest surprise for me was that the NC State women's program, number one seed, get knocked out in the Sweet 16. That stunned me. I just didn't expect it. Kayla Jones being out, I know that wasn't good news, but I just mentally, I was prepared for NC State to be worst case scenario in the regional final, and I expect them to be in the Final Four. I really did. And so to be knocked out in the Sweet 16, to me, was the biggest surprise of the month.
Biggest surprise for me is what is transpiring with the second season of Clemson softball. John Rittman's program is 22-4. Now, you may say, well, Wes, they were in the top half of preseason. Sure. But still, this is a program in year two, and they're in the top 20. They did have a 17-game win streak snapped over the weekend against Duke, but came back and won the last two. To me, the fact they're backing it up in year two and playing lights out and in the ACC hunt, good for them. That's just that's a nice, nice surprise and a really feel-good story for a team that, God, I mean, they didn't even get a first season. That's why I joked the other day, said it was season 1.5 back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested to kind of follow this as we go through the spring.
Well, people are excited about it down in Tigertown. I mean, they really are. I mean, the baseball team's actually gotten off to a kind of a sluggish start, but the ladies are rolling in softball, and people were pumped, needless to say. Yep. All right, best game of the month. Well, there's a number here that I could have played with, but you know what? The best game of the month was a week ago, and it was in men's lacrosse, and this game was stupid good. 15-14. It literally went down to the last second. Can you make a stop for the W? And as good as this game was, the one tonight, and I know we've been hyping it, one against two, has the chance to be in the neighborhood of this game. I'm telling you, that game last week was awesome if you watched it. So men's lacrosse gets my nod as the best game of the month, and Duke and Syracuse put on a show last week.
Nice job. I went back to Greensboro. Josh, hide your eyes.
Oh, no.
I thought the best game of the ACC tournament was the quarterfinal. I thought this was just a great game. Had everything you wanted, big shots, stops, Buddy Boeheim on fire. And at the end, a freshman steps up and knocks down a three. Here's Reese Beekman for the win. Just a great, great game. So I chose Virginia-Syracuse in the quarterfinals. And unfortunately for Virginia, it was their last game in the tournament.
That's right.
So
that's surprising. Normally we, and again, for folks that watch this for the first time, we don't compare notes. So we hear each other's picks
right
when you do here on the show. And normally we will have one or two, sometimes more, that are the same. We did not have a single one that matched, which is unusual, really unusual.
Mm-hmm. Well, I went a little off the grid. I went off the grid a little bit.
Yeah, you surprised me with the Virginia baseball pick surprised me. Logan Michaels. That I didn't expect that one at all.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to go off the grid a little bit, give some love to some spring sports because we know they're getting ready to come down the pipe here pretty strong. And keep an eye out. Keep an eye out. The guy is like, I mean, it's the stats are like, whoa, wait a second. Okay. Not only chances, which you expect, fielding percentage, nationally, all sorts of good things.
So how do catchers do it? You know what? And how do they do it? I mean, the catcher gets absolutely obliterated. Now, I'm sitting here working on one knee, and every time I saw the Logan Michaels highlights, I cringe like, oh, can you imagine if they said, Pac, you got to go catch for an inning, how painful that would be? I don't care if it's college,
right,
minor leagues,
you,
major
it'd
leagues.
Be impossible.
Oh, it's impossible just sitting in this chair for the most part. But how do the catchers do it, though? Like the major league guys, 162 games. Again, I know they don't play every game.
Yeah.
But my man Buster Posey's back. Florida State, great. San Francisco Giants, get ready to load up on Seattle tonight. But I just don't know how those – I don't know how they do it. I mean, that is just a physically – you just get worn out, man. That's brutal.
You know, we've had some remarkable ACC baseball players go to the next level as catchers. Maybe we should, you know, investigate that as we move into the spring a little bit. Maybe we get the former captain of the Red Sox, Georgia Tech great Jason Veritek, to join us one day talk about it.
That'd be great. I think we should. I mean, listen, hoops for us, for this league, is toast. It's done. And we'll live vicariously through others over the weekend when you're on the couch watching games and stuff. In fact, I had Mark Few on the show yesterday, and he's like, man, Pac, you know, we finally got there. And I think everybody's just kind of glad that we've kind of come to the end of the road that, hey, looks like we're going to reach the finish line. I just wish we had some ACC blood still in the game, didn't you? I mean, I really thought, like I said, NC State,
there you go.
women's team. I really thought the Wolfpack and Westmore, that they had a chance to knock the door down this year. But unfortunately, that's why we keep score.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
All right, yesterday we started messing around with a fun topic, and we didn't finish everybody in the league. And that was, who is the founding father or mother of your favorite ACC program? And this all started with, the ironically, the passing of Howard Schnellenberger over the weekend. And as I mentioned, 87 years, an incredible run. But you remember him not only as a football coach at Louisville and also the football coach at University of Miami. And when he took over the Canes program, they were in no man's land. Now, a lot of folks believe there was no reason to even have a football program. And in a very short period of time, he figured it out and brought a national championship, and a dramatic one at that, as the Canes knocked off the Nebraska Cornhuskers in the Orange Bowl, Bernie Kosar, your quarterback. And it was the first of a handful of national titles for Miami. And Wes, it got us thinking about, you know, who were the guys, or women for that matter, that kind of set the foundation for your ACC sports program. And, of course, it's got a trickle-down effect to other programs as well. So Howard Schnellenberger, for us, was a natural when it comes to the University of Miami. And we rattled through about 10 ACC teams yesterday, but there were a few that we didn't get to. And, again, folks can chime in, have some fun with this at 844-SAY-ACCN.
You know, it was interesting. Schnellenberger got a lot of love from Louisville folks, too, for kind of moving their program. But when you talk about the Cards, it's hard to assess where Louisville would be without Denny Crum. Wouldn't it be, Pac? Totally. I mean, just the sheer impact of basketball with the University of Louisville and what Coach Crum meant to not only that sport, but that athletic department, period. Right.
No question. And you know what? And as important as college basketball is to the Commonwealth, and you know about Kentucky's tradition and history, this dude right here was the guy. That guy right there for Louisville. So guess what?
Yeah.
Red's going to take on blue in the Commonwealth. And, man, were they good. And they were good for a long, long time. And not only were they tremendous in terms of wins and titles, but it was the way they played too, right? I mean, they were up and down the floor, and Dr. Duncanstein and all that. I mean, Louisville was must-watch television when they played. And their teams were always that way. And Denny Crum, just a brilliant basketball coach. And really, I think, like you said, I think he was the ID for Louisville, period. When you said Louisville, you thought immediately of Denny Crum and great basketball.
And everybody jumps to 80 when they won the national title at Market Square Arena in Indianapolis, and they beat Larry Brown and UCLA that night. But if you go back into the 70s in what would be the early days of Denny Crum's administration at the University of Louisville, they had Junior Bridgman. They had a player named Terry Howard who was a really good player. I mean, the University of Louisville, in many, many respects, just kind of grinded into – I mean, they did have – Charlie Tyree, Vince's dad. They had Wes Unseld. They had unbelievable players. But when the momentum of that program took off, it was when Denny Crum took over. Remember, former UCLA assistant, comes east, starts at Louisville, bang, and the explosion occurs in the 70s. But the building blocks that occurred in the 70s prior to winning the 80 title and then again in 86 in Dallas against Duke with Purvis Ellison, those 70s teams, to me, were the ones that almost just kind of set the foundation for what Louisville basketball would be well into the 90s before he retired back.
Never Nervous Purvis Ellison, right? One of the best nicknames long time. I loved it. And they were such a good – like I said, they were so much fun to watch. And, you know, now you go to Louisville, you see the facilities that are built there. I don't care if it's baseball, basketball, football – all the Olympic sports. I mean, it's big time. And Louisville's done a great, great job in that department. But I immediately go back and think about Denny Crum and the incredible success and how everything kind of flourished from there. Mm-hmm. Before we go to the next team, because we still got some more to go to, let's take a quick phone call. 844-SAY-ACCN. Greg in North Carolina is holding. Greg, go right ahead. Good morning.
Good morning. NC State's my school. And, yes, Everett Case is probably the founding father for basketball, but Willis Casey, a name that probably a lot of your viewers don't know, but your fathers and you all probably know, made a huge impact at NC State, came there as the swim coach, won about 11 titles swimming, but his mark was made in the hiring of coaches. KI women's basketball, Lou Holtz and Dick Sheridan football, Jim Valvano, North Sloan men's basketball, Don Easterly men's swimming, Bob Guzzo wrestling, Raleigh Geiger cross country, Richard Sykes in men's golf. So he was hiring these people that nobody hardly knew when I was there in the 70s. And we would go, who in the world is he hiring? But we all know that they all made a huge impact in the sports annals of NC State athletics. So, yeah, not a name a lot of people probably remember, but I remember him. And we'd always say he was – his worst part about him was that he graduated from Chapel Hill and – he was hiring these coaches nobody knew, and but yep, they were all winners. So I go with
you're right about that, Greg. Thank you.
Yep, good call, Greg, and good point. Excellent call. I think we touched yesterday on this. I think you have to, when you look at this, you can take the names that are familiar to you from a sporting perspective, head coaches, whatever the case may be, but you can't be. You know, you can't be afraid to look deeper at guys like Willis Casey. And I think Gene Cargan, one you mentioned yesterday at Virginia, right,
yep.
Pac?
That was my pick, yep.
There's all sorts of things. Yeah, Gene Cargan at Virginia, a lot of the same reasons that Greg just mentioned Willis Casey, that's why I think Cargan qualifies at the University of Virginia. No question whatsoever.
And I thought Elliot Avent yesterday was really good, too. The NC State baseball coach, you brought up Sam Esposito. And it was a perfect answer to why this is a interesting question, because you could go individual players, you can go coaches, you can go teams, and it's men, women, it's different eras. This is a fascinating question for any team in the ACC to try to answer, and you're liable to get three or four from any school, and you go, you know, it's a great point, I can't argue against that. And again, Willis Casey to me is a perfect example of what we're talking about.
Doug in South Carolina, next on Packer and Durham. Doug, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are y'all? Pack, I understand the knee problem since I played baseball and caught from Little League through high school, so I know your pain.
How do you do it? Yeah, sir. Stinks.
But, Gene Cargan at University of Virginia, but two others. Bruce Arena for soccer, and still has his fingers on that today with Joe Navetch as the head coach. And what about Terry Holland? He and Ralph Sampson started basketball, but then you get the tentacles of Terry Holland's coaching tree. Seth Greenberg, Craig Littlepage, Jim Larrañaga, Dave Odom, Mike Shuler, I think, and one of the Stokes brothers.
Jeff Jones.
Then Rick Carlisle and Jeff Jones.
Yep. Excellent.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you're spot on.
No question. All right. The Terry Holland situation at the University of Virginia is one that is absolutely under consideration. And I'll tie this back to the Cargan discussion. Who hired Terry Holland?
That's right.
Cargan. Right? Because that was before he departed to Notre Dame and Dick Schultz took over, right? Yes, Terry Holland, there's no doubt. I think, too, that you get some discussion about what Virginia basketball was in the 60s before Bill Gibson got there, and then Terry Holland followed Bill Gibson. When Bill Gibson did the unheard-of thing and left the University of Virginia to go to the University of South Florida to start basketball, I remember that.
You know,
but Terry Holland's impact at the University of Virginia is significant.
You know, we talked about Fitz. Jeff White was with us yesterday, and it was the anniversary of Tony Bennett in, 2009. signing up to be the man at UVA. Yeah. And we talked about fits, right? And Tony Bennett in UVA, natural fit. Mm-hmm. Dabo Swinney in Clemson, natural fit. Frank Beamer at Virginia Tech, natural fit. Terry Holland at Virginia was a natural fit in terms of his persona, the way he conducted his business, when you had conversations with him. It just kind of fit the description of what you expect from someone from the University of Virginia. Right. Didn't I mean, at least to me, it did. And yep. He was always dignified. He was always classy. Mm-hmm. Treated you with respect. Could have a disagreement with you, but not make you feel like an idiot, right? One of those deals. And had a great sense of humor, mm-hmm. and still does. But to me, Terry Holland was like you thought of Virginia and you saw Terry Holland, you went, there it is. That is UVA right there.
Yeah. Yep. Before we get to break, Dan in North Carolina this morning. Hi, Dan. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you gentlemen today?
Excellent. Sort of.
Fine, thanks.
Your question about the founding mothers, fathers of each institution is interesting. One guy that I don't think has been mentioned who was very dear to me, and I'm sure Billy will agree, there was a coach in Clemson that began his coaching career, I guess you could say, around 69-70 when a chemistry professor at Clemson decided that it was time for Clemson to have a soccer school or a soccer team. And as I remember, he began the soccer program from scratch as a club rather than a league team. And Ibrahim won a couple of national titles, which up until Dabo's run at Clemson hadn't been done by any other coach there. And he really was a founding father in, I think, soccer for the league, not so much Clemson. Soccer really took off after he began to develop first-class programs, and it's really caught on. So I think we need to mention I.M. Ibrahim when we speak of the great coaches.
He built a great program, and that's ironically, Clemson's men's soccer program today is number one in the country. Mm-hmm. And I.M., not only was he a great soccer coach, he was also a smart businessman. I swear to God, when I was in school, I think he owned, it seemed like 15 stores in downtown Clemson, and everyone was a sporting goods store. And if you wanted some soccer gear, brother, you'd walk in any one of those stores and get yourself a deal. I used to also hit golf balls on the Clemson golf team onto the soccer field, and we had terrible facilities back in the 80s for golf, but soccer was like pristine. So we'd go out there and just start hitting balls on all that green grass, and he'd scream at me every day. I said, man, you're lucky I haven't got accuracy, could land a golf ball in a soccer field. But he was tough, man, but he was a great coach.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, as I mentioned, and so did Wes, Joe Bresci joined us yesterday, because tonight you got a little Duke, North Carolina, and you know, it's always exciting when you got the shades of blue, but you throw in a little 1-2, the top two offensive teams in the country, man, doesn't get much better than that.
There's no question. That's what makes the game so exciting, right? Two great teams. Duke scoring, last seven games, they've scored 82 goals in the first half, which is astronomical. And for us, we love to put points on board. We're number one in offense and offensive efficiency as well. So it'll be fun to watch. And two of the best players in the country, Mike Sowers for Duke and Chris Gray for Carolina.
Joe, they say styles make fights. Is that what this is? Is it just a fit with you and Duke, and it just so happens, by the way, it's Duke and Carolina in lacrosse as opposed to basketball or anything else that Duke and Carolina get riled up in?
Yeah, there's no question. When you're so close, 9 miles down the road, and the excitement just builds for everything, it doesn't matter if it's fencing, basketball, lacrosse, field hockey, et cetera. There's just a love to play each other and a mutual respect. We have incredible respect for Coach Danowski's staff and his entire program and team and how they run things. And they're as talented as can be. And I think when you look at the grad students and the extra year of eligibility for kids, I'm so glad it worked out that way from an NCAA standpoint. And now, we have an opportunity to see two great teams, two loaded teams, specifically offensively, to go at it on Thursday.
All right, Joe. So with that said, we could sit here, and you've already given us tons of numbers already from an offensive side on both sides, Duke and North Carolina. Does it come down to who plays the best D? Because you got to assume everybody's going to score here.
Yeah, I think it will. Honestly, I think their faceoff guy, Nassau, did a terrific job of giving them possessions when they played Syracuse last week. And for us, we have to be efficient at the faceoff X, between the lines, ground balls. Possessions are going to be key because each team can score. So defensively, two very good goalies as well. I know Colin Creek for us has done a wonderful job, played great against UVA a couple weeks back and on the road, which isn't easy in the ACC. And we're going to have that opportunity again on the road, to play this week. So I'm excited. As a coach, you get a little bit nervous, but we're prepared. We've had 11 days to kind of get ourselves ready. Took the guys paintballing Saturday, gave them a little breather, had some fun. And we're looking forward to it. It's a great challenge. We know it's a regular season game. We also know that, heck, we're going to see him in a month anyway in Chapel Hill.
All right. So, whoa, back up here, Pac. We went paintballing with lacrosse players. What could possibly go wrong, Joe?
You know, my biggest fear, I was like, look, guys, I want to have some fun. I want to, we prepared all week last week because we had an off weekend. I was like, look, let's go have some fun, enjoy ourselves, let our hair down a little bit, not think about the game. We went out, we paintballed. I didn't play this time for the first time because I was preparing a meal for them afterward. They went out, had a blast. And my key question when they got back, first thing I said to the captains, everybody healthy?
Right.
It was fun. The defense dominated the offense, I must say. So right there, we got the defensive win.
Joe, when you have a matchup of one versus two, I mean, there's always going to be hype. I don't care what the sport is. You give me one versus two in the country, it's a big deal. But in this league, with so many good teams, everybody's ranked. It seems like everybody's ranked in the top five when you look at a poll. You can't get too high, right? You hear that old cliche all the time. Hey, it's another game. And I know you want to downplay, but it really isn't. It's Duke, North Carolina. I don't care if you guys were winless. It'd be a big deal, much less one versus two. But given how good the league is, how do you keep the even keel? Is this where experience on your team, your leadership, captains, everything else comes into play here? Because win or lose, guess what? The next team up will be somebody with a number beside their name.
There's no question. And, that's what makes the rivalry so special is that they're right down the road, Tobacco Road. And, I think from our perspective, after this game, we have UVA again in Chapel Hill. We have Syracuse, Notre Dame, and then Duke again. All of which are in the top 10 and most in the top five. So, we have to keep it in perspective. One thing we did a really good job of, and I think your point is well taken, we have 17 seniors on our roster, and I know they have 15 graduate students on their roster as well as seniors. Wow. And it's a veteran group on both sides. So I think that kind of experience allows guys to stay the course and just keep playing. We always say play 60 minutes, and that's what we had to do a couple of weeks ago against UVA, knowing that it's going to be an up and down type game and goals are going to be scored left and right. And you can't score enough, honestly. If you get a big lead, you never know. I mean, you look at the Syracuse Duke game last week, was up 12-5 and here comes Syracuse. And that's the way the ACC and that's what makes it fun to be a part of.
All right, so when it's 5-4 midway the second half, we're going to lay this one at your feet, okay?
I hear you. Just that means that my defensive coach would be really happy. Coach Metz won't be so happy at the offensive end, but Coach U will be ecstatic if it's 5-4.
Hey, if it's 5-4, that's what you just say. That's just good coaching. That's just nothing more than preparation and coming up with a game plan, man. That's what that's all about.
No question about that. It'll be fun. I tell you, it'll be fun. I think everybody's ready for it. There's been a lot of talk going up to it, and here we are, 24 hours away, and it's the cool thing is it's a 9-mile drive, so we're hop on the bus and you're there. We might suit up and buckle the chin straps before we leave Chapel Hill.
It's got to be great to have this though, right? I mean, after last spring and the miss. To have these kind of battles take shape, it's just got to be awesome not just for you and for the teams themselves, fans, the league. I mean, just the value of the game has got to be so prevalent.
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, you can't get better than this. And it's been fun for the young men to get an opportunity to play. You know, we were all so devastated a year ago. All of lacrosse was, and sports, and, you know, in general. And to have these type of games and the kids getting the opportunity to make up that year and get the year back, and summer extending their graduation, you know, for grad school and so forth is just terrific. So we're beyond thrilled for our men, but really for the entire country of lacrosse. I mean, it's just been fun to have it back, and to see it with so much excitement surrounding it is really cool.
7 p.m. tonight, Mr. Durham. It's go time. It will be big time. 1 versus 2, the shades of blue. And like I said, tonight, the men center stage. Saturday, another 1 versus 2 in North Carolina and Syracuse. Going to be a big, big weekend ahead in lacrosse. Always is in this league.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.